keep the pick.
This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest instalment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, the founder and CEO of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled Stable Coins Unpacked: Benefits, Risk and Realities. Welcome to all our audience today. Good morning, afternoon and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through this session today. It's going to take about 30 minutes. If you do ask a question, please put it on the comments as you see on the right-hand side of your screen. I can take these as we go throughout the whole session. If there are any left over at the end, don't worry. We can answer that question at the end of the session. Now, I'm joined today by our guest speaker, Michael Carr. So welcome, Michael. Would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me today, Nev. I'm Michael Carr. I'm the CEO and founder of Buen Crypto Consulting. We are a professional advisory service dedicated to the digital asset and crypto industry here in Ireland. We span across Europe, Middle East, and the US with clients, and we deal with compliance risk, regulatory, and operation resilience advisory for tier one, tier two crypto exchanges and traditional finance firms.
Perfect. Now, as everyone knows, when we start these sessions off, I talk a little bit about football. Everyone knows I'm a big Liverpool supporter and I like to go on about success of that football team over the last few years. I've just found out that you too are a Liverpool supporter. So a little bit about that, Michael, and is that top of your list when you think about sport?
Yeah, it would be near the top. Being from Ireland, I suppose the GA is the top of the list. My own county, Roscommon, would be my number one team, but Liverpool would be my soccer team. Have been since I was about 7-8 years of age. Take a light interest at times, but I haven't been to see them yet. It's on the bucket list, maybe for 2026.
Well, I go to quite a lot of games, so maybe we can arrange that. I was just saying prior to this call, my first experience of Gaelic football when I went to Ireland, I was my wife's family was from Mayo, and we went over there and the first game I saw was Mayo Roscommon. So I have actually seen a Roscommon game, you'd be glad to know. So well, look, that's great. Well, look, thanks for joining us today. We're going to put Michael's email in the comments section, so if you do want to reach out to him after this podcast piece, feel free to do so. Now, I know, Michael, because I've done my research over the last few days, but, you know, would you like to bring to life what is a stable coin? You know, what does it mean? And, you know, what is it versus other digital assets?
Yeah, stable coin is a hot topic at the moment, Nev, in not just the digital asset industry, but in the traditional finance industry. And stable coin is a singular term, but there's multiple different types of stable coin. We have, first of all, algorithmic stable coins, which is a type of stable coin that is circulated based on an algorithm that watches market conditions to increase or decrease the supply in order to keep the peg. And the peg is to a local currency such as euro, dollar, or GBP. Then you have what's known as an ART or an asset reference token, which is a stable coin. And that's a stable coin that maintains its peg by being backed by a bunch of assets that could be securities, could be commodities, and could be cash. So it's a mixture, it's a basket as such, or a mixture of assets that is backing the peg of one-to-one on that stable coin. And then you have essentially an EMT, an electronic money token, which is the same as what the traditional electronic money tokens are, which is a stable coin that's backed by fiat. It's backed one-to-one where the fiat is kept as the reserve, and that matches for everyone that's minted or issued of the stable coin. you have a corresponding €1, $1, one Great British Pound to support.
Well, and you know, why is it so interesting right now? Because we've heard of crypto for years, obviously fiat currencies, we all understand them. But why is it so interesting right now? Why am I hearing more and more of this over the last, you know, 6-12 months?
Yeah, it's really taken off in the last 6 months. And in the last 3 months, it's really, again, it's reaching fever point. I suppose the factors in that, like stablecoins are a real crossroads of the technology of digital assets. So they're, if you think of it, they're not like the volatile crypto token or crypto coin that we're used to, you know, that we see up and down or in the term pump and dump, which is highly volatile. This is really a technology that's bridging traditional fiat and the digital asset version of this. Also, why it's so topical is it raises many policy questions. So different jurisdictions have different views. And it's very topical in the sense that, is a stable coin electronic money? Is it a security? Is it a depository? And that's why it's become, you know, very topical. But also as well, one thing that we would look at from, I suppose, the digital asset industry looking outwards into the traditional finance industry is it's already systematically very important in our industry. So it's not new to us in the digital asset industry. It has underpinned liquidity in this industry from the very beginning, stablecoin. So we have the most commonly used one, USDT, would be around many, many years, and the emergence of Circle USDC as well. So they're already very systematically important, and now their usability is beginning to branch into traditional finance. That's why it's very topical and why you're hearing a lot about it.
No, sure. And can I buy a stablecoin? Do I exchange it? How would I end up owning or having 10 stablecoins, for instance?
Yeah.
So even if that's the right question.
No, it's a good question because, again, podcasts like this are informative, and that's a question that people will know. How do I get one? There's various means of acquiring a stablecoin. The most common mean would be to on-ramp some fiat or traditional money onto an exchange. And in order to engage in trading, you would purchase or exchange your fiat into a stablecoin. So if you had 10 Great British Pounds, you would transfer that onto your OKX or your Binance or Crypto.com account or other exchanges, not just those. And then you would exchange that for a value of stablecoin, let it be USDT, USDC, or various other ones from various countries.
I've got it. And I guess the value's in the name. It's a stable coin ultimately because it's pegged to a currency. Therefore, it's reliable in terms of the value rather than the crypto I'm used to, which is all over the place.
Yeah, and the crypto that people are used to hearing about is the, I suppose, volatile disaster stories. You know, that's what crypto and digital assets has its reputation on. But presently, I would say that we're going through, again, like stablecoins is becoming mainstream. We're seeing Bitcoin volatility, which I won't get into, becoming less and less. And we're seeing then these disaster stories of people investing in crypto becoming less and less. And this term of the Wild West is being used, again, without repeating myself, less and less. Yeah.
Got it. So, look, let's get into you. What are the benefits of stablecoins? So, you know, who stands to gain the most out of them?
The user, the end user, essentially stands to get the most benefit out of them, the final user, the end user. So there's lots of benefits depending on who within the industry you talk to. But from a traditional banking perspective, who may be looking at today, the main benefit is faster settlement. It's almost instant, definitely same day, definitely within same minute, definitely within nearly same millisecond, instant settlement. So it reduces the time funds are in flow, which will be a normal traditional from the traditional perspective. The transaction cost then, because of the reduction of the funds in flow, and because of the reduction of intermediaries, i.e. there's none, it's wallet to wallet, the cost to send that money and to do that transaction is far, far less because you don't have all the middlemen. So that's the reduced fee. So if you're sending a stablecoin, 100, we say USDT or USDC dollars, from one wallet to the next, the charge on that may be less than a cent. It could be a cent, whatever, but it wouldn't be what you would generally experience nowadays. And add to that, then you have better visibility. So you're sending from A to B. You know when your money is going to get there. You know when it arrives because you can see it. You know the length of time it will take, as opposed to if you're based in the UK and you're sending money to someone in Australia, if they don't have instant payment rails, you're always part of that waiting game. You can't see where it is. On the blockchain, using blockchain technology, you have full visibility as to that transaction. So there would be, if I was to pick my top three, I could give you 50, but there would be the top three benefits that we would see with the adoption of stablecoin for traditional finance institutions, for their clients and for them.
Yep, got it. We've just got a question come in. I'll ask it now, actually, from Heba Shamas, and partly answered, I think, previously, but what's the difference between stablecoin versus digital currency? And also, is it because digital currency is issued by a government?
That's essentially, yeah, he probably has answered that question himself there. There's two differences. A stablecoin can be issued by a private company or publicly traded company. Circle issues stablecoins, USDC, and that's a publicly traded company. They issue the stablecoin and they issue it based on demand, whereas a central bank digital currency is issued by a government. It's controlled centrally and its issuance is controlled centrally. As with all blockchains and a currency on the chain, it would be open, so you would be able to view the transactions with that. So they would be similar in that sense. But a stablecoin is a privately issued or publicly owned company that issues it. Yeah.
Got it. Thanks for that. Now, when I was doing my research, Michael, on stablecoins, I came across a phrase. It kept popping up and it was called stablecoin sandwich, which I started to understand what it meant, but it would be good if you could give your interpretation of what one of those is.
And that's a good question, Ev. That's one of the most used phrases I've heard in the last 2 months in stablecoins, the stablecoin sandwich. It's a good term for a basic enough flow, as such, payment flow. So what the stablecoin sandwich describes is it's a payment flow model that uses stablecoins as the intermediate bridge between two fiat transactions. So how it would work would be as follows. You would have a client or a person that would send fiat to an exchange or to a protocol or blockchain protocol. That fiat then is converted into a stablecoin. The stablecoin then goes from wallet to wallet and then is exchanged again or transferred back to fiat the other side. So essentially where the term stablecoin sandwich comes from is two fiat transactions with the stablecoin in the middle. Facilitation.
Got it. Now, is that happening right now? Because I do quite a lot of conversion of pounds into euro personally. I'm allowed to go on this exchange. I exchange it. It's near the spot rate, but it's not quite. Do you think a stable coin will be behind that? Or obviously, I don't see it at all, but a stable coin could be behind that because it happens instantaneously. So I presume it could be operated by a stable coin sandwich.
It could be. It could be, depending on the organization that you deal with. It could be behind that. But where you would see it mainly would be in the traditional banking terms would be, I suppose, payments into LATAM markets, or you may also see payments, we say long distance payments across multiple jurisdictions. So again, if we use UK and Australia as an example, I want to send money to someone in Australia, let it be a business, let it be a individual, I onboard my fiat onto the site that I want to use it on, or to the wallet, I convert it, I send it the other side, and it's off-ramped, which is the term, on-ramp to put it onto the wallet, off-ramp to exchange it off, and that's where it comes from. So it could be used, but it's more than likely it's just an FX transaction on your side.
I get it. All right, good. Let's, if we're talking about liquidity, which is close to our hearts, you know, how can stable coins improve liquidity and, you know, operational efficiency for banks?
Yeah, this is where banks, I suppose, their operational efficiency, operational resilience, which is big at the moment in Europe under DORA, is where banks can improve a lot using stablecoins or adopting stablecoin usage. You know, they don't have to convert everything to stablecoins overnight. And it comes down to, I suppose, the word efficiency. What we have at the moment is generally batch processing. You know, that's the traditional model. It's batch processing. It's intraday liquidity based on ledgers, etc., etc. And what you see with stablecoins is instant real-time settlement. So you have, from a liquidity perspective, you will be able to manage your capital flows far better and more efficiently within the bank, because you don't have to, let's say, isolate capital in order to cover for what would be deemed as maybe slowness of funds or delay in funds arriving, or also uncertainties which your risk team would have built it in into your payment processing flows. You have real-time settlement, so that means then you're only using the capital that you need, and you can better use that capital in more efficient methods, obviously to make more money, instead of having it sitting idle. So that's where you would see, and you also reduce, by the way, you reduce your resilience on your corresponding banks, because you remove that, all those middlemen or all those intermediaries. Apologies for saying middlemen all the time. That is, or that term is long gone, but intermediaries, and you reduce that, I suppose, reliance, and you have your, it's quick, it's efficient, it's end to end, and it's peer to peer.
I've got it. Quick, efficient, and more predictable as well, because instantaneous. Got it. Correct. And look, if I'm sat in a bank treasury or an ALM team, you know, what does it mean for me? How do I have to think about this? There's lots of things I need to think through and things that are new, but specifically with the rise of stable coins, what does it mean for me sat in those teams?
Yeah. Again, there's multiple ways of looking at this. You know, you can look at the benefits which we've gone through, or you can look at the risks or the challenges. And we've kind of touched on the benefits already. So let's see, like, what challenge would that, if I was sitting in Treasury, what would someone sitting in Treasury seem as a challenge? Well, first of all, you have the biggest one, which would be a deposit substitution risk, would be a return to use that. And traditionally, we would see banks that would use, they would use deposits as low cost, cheap sources of funding, because deposits generally are sticky. You know, people put money in the bank, they leave it sitting there for years. That's the traditional model. Whereas with stable coins offering, and these firms offering such good yield, you could see an adoption of stablecoin where people do withdraw them funds into that normally sit on deposits into stablecoin and deposit them elsewhere with some of these stablecoin firms or exchanges, essentially, as well, that offer high yield on stablecoin, and that high yield brings adoption. With that, then, I suppose that deposit substitution risk, and with that volatility of, or I suppose, outflow of deposits, that's going to put a higher funding cost then on Treasury. So that's going to have a massive knock-on effect if you're not the stablecoin, if you're not using stablecoins and offering a yield on your stablecoin to keep it in house. That's going to have a knock-on effect on higher funding costs, and that, you know, that will have a massive effect on Treasury. You also have to look at stable coins as well, and how they are backed, and the reserve and the regulations and what you can do with them. And if it was me sitting in a Treasury in a bank in Ireland or the UK or anywhere where you are, and I was looking at, well, what's the rules around stable coins, especially the ones that are backed one-to-one. And if you have funds safeguarded, you can then, under regulatory rules such as MiCAR, for example, you can invest in short-term, high liquid investment vehicles, them funds that are backing those stablecoins. So the stablecoin is pegged, you can take up to 70%, depending on your local regulator, and invest those in highly liquid T-bills or government securities. And they're generally cheap to acquire, but they're traditional banking sources of investment. And that would put a demand on those. So that would put an extra demand on the availability of those investment opportunities for banks. So you'll start to compete then with this new form of, let's call it fiat, or not fiat, but digital currency for your traditional investment vehicles. And that would be that would prove a big challenge to some. Yes.
Got it. And so if there's a high yield on, why is there a high yield on stable coins? So if I've got a currency and my stable coins pegged to the currency, why would I not, you know, why would I naturally get a higher yield on stable coin? Is it demand and supply, or is it some other factor? Because I was thinking, why not transfer some of my money into stable coins? Is that what I should do after this call?
We'll have a chat after the call. Definitely.
You can advise me.
I'll point you in the right direction. It's not.
You're not a financial advisor.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. There's definitely options there for you, Nev. But why are the high yields? Well, like anything, to attract, let's bring it down to its basics, to attract customers, to attract adaptability, to attract people to use it, there has to be something else. Yes. It's the same as many years ago. If you looked at, we say, lots of interest-bearing savings account were linked to the ECB rate plus the bank's added percentage. That was to get deposits into the bank. And that's no difference with stablecoins. Now, there's various other factors. But if you want to bring it down to its most basic, that's it.
And is there a higher risk holding them versus a currency, or is it the same risk as I can always transfer them back?
The risk to hold a stable coin in a deposit with a regulated entity that is regulated by a supervisory body such as the Central Bank of Ireland or the FCA or anywhere in Europe, etc., it poses, it gives you not all the same guarantees, but it gives you a certain element of comfort for definite because of the safeguarding protocols that these exchanges, for example, must follow. So would it be the same? Would you have the same risk holding it in a traditional bank where you earn 0% or holding it, for example, in Coinbase, who might offer you 5 to 10%? Well, Coinbase is a highly regulated entity with a massive compliance team and a massive emphasis on compliance, safeguarding, risk models, publicly traded. My own view, not financial advice, it would be fine. And you would earn the yield. So, but that's my own view. But is there the safety deposit or the deposit protections that are there in a traditional bank? No. That is the reality of it.
Note to self, investigate stablecoin after this podcast.
Definitely.
Great. So look, why is real-time visibility, predictive forecasting across all rates becoming essential now then?
It's really two reasons. There's the operational resilience and there's the regulatory expectations. So with this advanced technology, because of this, I suppose what a regulator now knows is that you have this visibility, you have this transparency on the blockchain. They understand that this is real-time, you know, settlement. And with the fragmentation of payment rails, this forecasting across all rails is becoming essential, because a stable coin, you could have USDC that can be sent, and that's how you transfer it across multiple blockchains. So you must be able to see, in order to maintain the integrity of the coin, where it is at all times and across which chains it's on. So, and you would see that. A good example of where that would be a requirement for yourself, Nev, and for the people watching, if you park the traditional banking aspect and you look at, we say, EMT issuers. So in Europe at the moment, we have 14 EMT issuers who are individual firms that have been granted the privilege or the license, but it's not a license, the affordability to issue stablecoins. And some of them are for themselves, and some of them are for other technology companies who wish to issue that stablecoin. But those stablecoin issuers could have a stablecoin that they're issuing that's transferable across multiple networks. So as part of the reconciliation that they must do and their proof of reserves, they must be able to see across all payment rails and all blockchain networks where those stablecoins are, or that particular stablecoin, because it's interoperable across multiple networks. So that's why it's very important. And regulators understand that.
No, they do. I get it, right. Okay, so, you know, one of the risks that and challenges that banks face, you know, especially around deposit outflows, FX flows, you know, what are the risks and challenges that they see?
I would say, for me, possibly the biggest one, which is one that you will see in the papers and in the news, which would be a concern of Europe in particular, would be that a particular stablecoin that's not of the native currency to the jurisdiction. So, for example, USDC or USDT in Europe becoming a dominant within the payment space. So if you see like a euro dollar or dollar peg stablecoin really becoming a central part of intraday liquidity and payments across European payment rails, and no European stablecoin starts to, we say, fight back on that dominance, or people start using that stablecoin instead of using euro, that will be your biggest challenge. And that's where Europe should be looking to allow the issuance of more stablecoins, also instead of just flooding the market with 100 different euro type of stablecoins, is have a controlled regulation where you have European stablecoins being used in European banks for European payments. But we're a long way away from that. But at the moment, the biggest risk is the American dominance in the stablecoin industry, for definite.
Okay, so that was kind of, what about opportunities for banks? So, you know, what are the opportunities that they present for banks from reverse management, on-off ramping, liquidity provision? What's the upside?
The upside I would see from a personal perspective is opening up new markets. That would be a big one. So opening up new markets for faster settlements. So if you look at, I suppose, the core why stablecoins were created, or a lot of people that got into this industry, why they got into the digital asset industry, was to support the unbanked, which is one, and you'll hear that a lot, was to bank the unbanked, and also then to open up opportunity to get payments into countries with very volatile currencies in Latin America, for example, and open up those markets. That would be a big one. Opening up payment rails into we say the Latin markets and underbanked markets would be a massive opportunity in my own view for banks. There are other ones: faster payments, operational efficiency. You have a reduction in time from A to B to send a transaction. You can also work 24/7 on your settlements as well. But if you go back to, you know, where the real opportunity and business opportunity is, that's where the business
is. Those markets. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, we're almost out of time, Michael. Well, the question I always ask at the end, but if you could offer one piece of advice to banks navigating this stablecoin evolution, apart from phoning your good self, what would it be?
My biggest thing would be education. You have to educate yourself in this market. The digital asset or crypto market industry, it moves very, very quick. So technology is evolving all the time. How you use that technology is evolving all the time as well. So any good, I suppose, project within any bank that they're starting off would be to bring in a subject matter expert, and that's subject matter expert team, expert in residence, and then build your project around the knowledge that you can upskill yourself with. Because you could find that coming into a project like this, unless you're fully aware of what you can and can't do and understand the industry, it could be a very painful exercise.
No, I've got it. All right, that's perfect. Unfortunately, Michael, we have run out of time today. So thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your views. If anyone asks any questions after the event, no problem. If you put them in the comments or send us through to them, we will answer them for you later. So that concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much for joining today. Look out for our next podcast very soon. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.